Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight. Welcome to Hospice Survivors and Victims. I am your host, Carly Walden. We do have a very special guest on with us tonight, Dr. Marilyn Singleton. And Dr. Singleton received her MD from Stanford, and she did a surgery residency at UCSF, and she has also published hundreds of articles, and you can find those at theconservativepundit.net. And with that being said, I just wanted to welcome you to the show, Dr. Singleton. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. How are you doing?
Well, recovering from a cold. Even doctors get sick, but I'm doing fine.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm glad to hear. I'm so glad that you're able to join us. I wanted to let our audience know, you know, the topic, what we're going to be discussing this evening is very important and imperative. I'll get a notepad and a pen and take some notes. We're going to be talking about how the coercive nature of Medicare and how it has become today and how really it is up to each individual. We're kind of, it's every man for himself now within this healthcare, you know, system that we're in today. And I really, I look forward to hearing everything, your experience. Dr. Singleton has had her solo practice since 1981, I believe. But anyway, we look forward to hearing from you, Dr. Singleton. Can you speak a little bit? Tell me what you wanted to talk about with in regards to Medicare and how it is today.
I think one of the things that people need to know, especially before Medicare even starts, is one, it doesn't take care of as many things as people think it does, and mm-hmm. there's quite huge copays, and you are very subject to the government's interpretation of what they consider a quote-unquote necessary treatment. And mm-hmm. that's the scary part, because as everyone's worried about cost containment and sending people to hospice, it's starting mm-hmm. to be the new normal, the new first line of treatment, quote-unquote.
Uh-huh.
We have to pay attention and really look out for ourselves, really ask questions that, are you sure that an antibiotic won't help me? Are you sure X, Y, or Z won't help me? And don't be afraid to put a little extra money aside so you can go off and get a second opinion from somebody who perhaps isn't in a hospital system or some other setup where they might be overly eager to save money.
Right. Exactly. Okay, this is very important because we talk about this a lot, and I want you to expand on your experience of what you've seen with hospice becoming the new norm. Okay, someone goes into the hospital and they're, you know, let's say they're 87 years old, they might just have a urinary tract infection. And then the next thing you know, we have a doctor, we have a case manager coming in and recommending hospice. And that is something that a lot of our guests and a lot of our, you know, listeners have experienced. And can you tell me a little bit more about that, of what you have seen?
Well, one thing, I certainly have personal experience along those lines, and I just feel like, thank goodness, mm-hmm. I'm a doctor. My mother, mm-hmm. in fact, it was the exact age you named, was 87. She had mm-hmm. never had pneumonia before, and she got pneumonia, but mm-hmm. and it wasn't a terribly bad case of it either. And she was in the hospital one day, and the folks mm-hmm. from hospice came in, and I'm like, wait a minute, she hasn't even uh-huh. had time for any antibiotics to work. And I realized there's an expression, pneumonia is the old man's friend, but that's a very old expression in today's use of good antibiotics. So fast forward to them wanting to plop mother on hospice, she lived happily for 2 more years after that. So she was one of those hospice graduates, so to speak, and that's becoming more and more common, and it's obvious that people were put on hospice prematurely, otherwise they wouldn't be graduating out of it.
Right. That is so, you know, that's, as you know, that's how I got into doing this, is I was going to school to be a doctor myself, and they misdiagnosed my grandmother, and they put her in a hospice, but luckily through, you know, I feel like God used me to help save her life. We saved her life within hours of her dying. She had been overdosed. You know, they're putting people into eternal sedations and hastening death, unfortunately. But going back to Medicare and what is the best way that people can? You mentioned second opinions. Okay. Marty Oakley talks a lot about how people are afraid that they're getting medically kidnapped if they go for a second opinion. Well, we advise, don't tell your doctor that you're going for a second opinion. You know, when we say medically kidnapped, they could get into a hospice or conservatorship or guardianship, you know, things like this. And when people are not seeing their loved ones anymore.
Hello?
Marty? Dr. Singleton?
Yes.
I'm sorry, that just completely dropped. I'm sorry about that.
Oh,
That never happens. yes.
Live show, what can you do?
I know, right? Okay, unbelievable. So, moving right along. So speak a little bit more about that, and people, maybe directing them about getting a second opinion and how to go about doing that and not being afraid to do that or ask questions.
I think one of the first things, and you bring that up and you say not being afraid to ask questions, whenever you have a doctor visit, the couple days before, go through absolutely every medication you have had, take a list of all your prescriptions, because even though the doctor might have electronic medical records that are supposed to be keeping track of that, no system mm-hmm. is perfect, because sometimes you're on too many medications. So this is an mm-hmm. opportunity to be able to say, do I need this, do I need that? And think of absolutely any question you want to ask, and be very sure that you're asking the question about yourself. There's nothing that's more irritating when patients come in and it's some story about the neighbor down the street. And, of course, nobody knows the whole story about the neighbor down the street. So there's really no way the doctor can comment on that. So try to hold your symptoms or conversations or questions to things that are absolutely about yourself. And do all heart attack people need XYZ, whatever it might be? Do I really need this medication? So you have all these questions lined up, written down on a piece of paper. So that's a start, because when you walk in prepared, number one, it makes the doctor pay more attention to you, especially if it's a doctor you don't have a long time relationship with. And you can get right to the point right away, because they don't schedule that much time for these appointments, and you want to make sure that you get the most out of the appointment that you have made with the doctor. And if the doctor kind of blows off a question, you say, well, wait a minute, I don't understand that answer, and just say so. And I just think that's so important, because I really don't think there's a handful of guys that are just kind of the I don't care types, but for the most part, they don't realize that they haven't answered your question, and you just need to draw the focus back in to you and away from the computer, and you can say, just please, can you just take notes on this? The computer bothers me. And, you know, always in a nice way. It doesn't have to be confrontational, because that won't get you anywhere. And you will learn a lot, and the doctor's going to learn a lot about you and how you feel about things, how you feel about your health. And the other thing doctors really appreciate is knowing that a patient does care about their health, because there's so many people who you just can't believe how many people have the attitude, well, I guess I can eat those French fries because I'm on my cholesterol medicine. Well, nobody likes to hear that. You know, just because you're on the medicine doesn't mean that you can then eat like a pig. And,
No, that's a very important point. That excellent point. That's true.
And
you know,
and
just like people that are diabetics.
Right. Oh, I have insulin, so I guess I can eat all the cake I want. Well, that's just not how it works. So you have to take care of yourself. And the better you take care of yourself, even if you have multiple chronic problems, the doctor just wants to know that you're part of the solution and not just sitting there waiting for somebody else to take care of you.
Right. Exactly. They want to see that you're proactive and that you care. And you're going to do what you say you're going to do and stick to it and not, you know. So that those are excellent points. And like you said, you know, have your questions prepared, you know, for our audience. Have them prepared so that they, you know, before you go in exactly what you're, you know, exactly what you need. And getting back to, you know, the nature of our healthcare system now, you know, I feel as though, and so do many others, that we are in crisis in our healthcare, and we really are. I was I became a board member for Hospice Patients Alliance. I was on that for 3 years and talked to many people, and I left, and, you know, I'm doing my own thing now. And I talk to people every day, and this breaks my heart that our loved ones are being literally sent to these, you know, it's like the modern day Holocaust. I really feel that way. If you're elderly or disabled, they look at you and they just want to immediately, I mean, I talk to people every day that they're wanting to bring hospice in, and then that person's gone. Let's say they do bring them in. That person's gone within just a couple of days. It doesn't take them long. You know, a lot of people are, you know, they're starting to pick up, oh, no, was my loved one's death hastened? Were they overdosed? Because, you know, the Euthanasia Society took over many hospices. We're not talking all hospices. We're just talking about the rogue hostesses that are committing this type of thing. And, you know, like you said, it's becoming more common. And, you know, from your perspective, I always recommend to get home health care. And we find that to be very effective in helping families. Do you recommend that to your patients?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest problems, and this is all part of the problem of poor overall health care policy, that in one sense is changing toward the direction of home health care. For years, Medicare would only pay and still only pays for skilled nursing facility. Medicaid would only pay if you were in some sort of an institution. And I think they were afraid that they would be defrauded and therefore they wouldn't pay for home health care. Finally, Medicaid is paying for home health care and realizing that it's much less expensive than being in an institution, not to mention that the family member is happier. I mean, you can get food from your own refrigerator. I mean, most people, when they get old and sick, aren't that hungry. But wouldn't it be nice if the one thing that you love, your pistachio ice cream or whatever it happened to be, that you could just have that at will and have whatever you want, be in your own bed with your own pillow and your own pajamas, and that itself is helpful and very healing. So finally they figured it out that people need to be at home. And, you know, it took long enough. The biggest problem, and this is something that your younger listeners really have to pay attention to, is finding the sweet spot of time to get long-term care insurance. Because you don't want to buy it when you're too young, because then you've paid premiums for years, way too many years. But if you wait too long, then the premiums will be too high. And usually around the late 50s is a good break-off point. But this is something that everyone should talk to an insurance agent about, because they really do know the sweet spot of when the balance between the price of premiums, because you can get fairly low premiums if you buy it young enough, and usually the premiums stay the same. And long-term care insurance will pay for someone to come into your home if you have two so-called activities of daily living that you can do. And the activity, you know, the activities of daily living, being able to cook your own food, dress yourself, care for yourself, even do like housework.
See, that would be an occupational therapist. That's what occupational therapists work on specifically. And they will come to your home and they will help you. And they will do their, I really do love home health care. I'm just
wonderful.
Such an advocate for it.
Well, and I just think, and if anybody has something, if it comes up where there's an opportunity to say, well, can this be paid for at home, always bring that up, because you never know. And sometimes even if a person has Medicare, the supplemental insurance might pay for it, but for sure, long-term care insurance does, but you can't get long-term care insurance after you're already old and sick. It's something that you have to think ahead about.
You have to start young.
You have to start while you're still healthy. And so it's certainly something for folks to look into. And so much depends on your own personal situation, but I just think it's wonderful if you happen to have kids, but a lot of people don't, or the kids might not live in the same town, and you don't expect your kids to pick up and move to wherever you are. And I think now home health has become enough of a common thing that I remember when there just used to be one company that anybody ever heard of. Now there's three mm-hmm. or four. And so there's, you can actually check these places out and look them up. And thank goodness for the internet and Yelp. And
yes.
you know, it really
helps. Oh, absolutely.
And then, of course, if you know somebody, ask them. And usually, I hate to say doctors themselves are the worst with things like that because they usually don't know some of these nuts and bolts. But there mm-hmm. might be a doctor who visits patients at nursing homes who knows such things. And a lot of times, the social worker at the hospital knows these things, and they generally do. And you'd be amazed, sometimes you don't even have to be a patient in the hospital, but you can call your local hospital and ask to speak to a social worker or one of the case managers and just mm-hmm. say that you were interested in knowing what feedback they had about X company that mm-hmm. sends out home health workers. Because mm-hmm. I think having someone in your home, it can be a very stressful choice to make. And,
uh-huh.
You know, you hear about people robbing you and, you know, and all this sort of thing. And
uh-huh.
generally these companies are bonded and vet the people and they don't have felons. And this is one reason why people use companies, even though they're more uh-huh. expensive than if you find the nice neighbor girl down the street,
mm-hmm.
you don't really know anything about her. Maybe she's very nice, but she has a creepy boyfriend. You know,
right.
these are all these things that when you're elderly and feeling vulnerable, the last
mm-hmm.
thing you want to think is the person who you have in your home who's supposed to be taking care of you is
yeah.
going to be committing elder abuse on you.
You're exactly right. And you know what? You brought up a very important point. And this is a realization for me, is getting long-term care insurance. That can be part of solving this problem that we're facing in this culture of death. There is a culture of death. Okay, that's
mm-hmm.
operating. And I'm sure
mm-hmm.
you've seen it. You are, you know, see how it works and see how, you know, nursing homes work in tandem with hospices and hospitals and kickbacks and all of this that goes on. And but that is part of the solution, I think, could be part of a huge part of protecting our lives and our loved ones, is by making sure that we get this long-term care, you know, insurance. We need to, you know, I don't hear people talk about that very much. So let me ask you this, for example, like when someone comes in, you know, to your office and, you know, they're looking at, you know, end stage, you have to look at, you know, you're the doctor, you know, the doctors are supposed to say whether the patient's going to live. You know, they don't think they have 6 months to live or more. This is where if more doctors, I feel like, could get more involved in home health care instead of hospice, because instead of using hospice services, because their home health care can manage the pain just like hospice can. They can administer drugs just like hospice can, but they're not going to come in and just give you, you know, make you stop, you know, stop feeding you, no liquid, no, none of your medicines, and then just using morphine, Haldol, and Ativan or Seroquel, whatever they have at their disposal,
mm-hmm.
you know, for them to use, which is usually their protocol, what they start usually right away. And that's, you know, that's, there's so many families that have gone through this. So that's why we're addressing it. But, like, would you, you know, tell the family, well, you know what, instead of you know, hospice. Let's look at home health care. Let's try to look and see, you know, because they have nurses, physical therapists, occupational therapists, speech therapists. You know, they have all of these benefits, and they're not going to come in and just hasten your death. Is the point that I'm making.
Have two different missions, you know, that, and the problem is because you don't want to give hospice a complete bad rap. There is a place for hospice, and there's no question.
Uh-huh.
I think, number one, people are not fully informed. I have a friend who's a hospice nurse, and she told me she had a hospice patient who reminded her, oh, now remember, I want CPR. And Jan just shook her head. It's like, no, when you sign up to go to hospice, that's when you don't want CPR. So, and it wasn't the patient's fault. I mean, someone did not fully explain what hospice really means.
Right,
and
that's something that we are educating. But, you know, once again, that is the purpose of this show, because there's so much, Dr. Singleton, that families do not know. They do not know. And they're blindly trusting. And once again, let me say it again. We focus, we're not giving it, you're absolutely right. It's not all hospices. We're talking about the rogue hospices, okay? The ones that are doing that, the ones, you know, that are not hastening. You know, there are hospices that are not hastening people's death, but letting them die in a natural death. But they're few and far between. But you're right. That would be a DNR, what you're talking about. That person's in hospice, and see, they're not understanding that. That breaks my heart. They don't understand that, you know, when you're in hospice, they're not going to give you anything. You're not going to get resuscitated. They're not going to take you to the hospital. They're not going to do any life saving measures at all. Okay.
And people need to know that and be ready for that, because some people are, you know, and they're going, good, that's what I want. But for people who don't want that, and fairly prematurely, or while they were practically in a daze in the hospital, they were referred to hospice, and it's a rude awakening when they discover that, no, when you sign into hospice, it means that you're signing in to do not resuscitate. And people just need to know so they can make an informed decision.
Right, right. What is your position? We have a protected medical decisions document, which is a, you know, it's the medical power of attorney. It's a very strong medical power of attorney. Have you heard of that document? That's one thing that we've been discussing online, you know, on air, and equipping people with that document. You know, so that people know exactly, like you just said, they need to know this stuff, and they don't know. But that is a medical power of attorney that's very strong, that basically even the doctors can override, you know, your wishes, in other words. With Medicare,
one of the things along those lines that's a more recent development, and I believe an excellent one, are video powers of attorney, where and there's a fellow who's an expert in this end of life stuff. He's actually the head of emergency medicine.
Oh, really?
And one of the University of Pittsburgh hospitals, and he developed this. And I think as an emergency medical doctor, they're probably in the worst position that anybody could be. They don't know anything about the patient, and they're faced with making life and death decisions. And what he came up with is there's a video of the person in their own words expressing exactly what their wishes are. Things like, if you witnessed my heart attack, I want to be resuscitated, but if I'm found on the street, don't bother, you know, because you kind of know it's too late and you'll be brain dead. But and then this is recorded, and there's a card, a laminated card, just like a driver's license, that has a QR code on it, and you can put that QR code on the cell phone, and then you can pop up the video. And so
right there,
yeah, because everybody in the hospital has cell phones now. That's how the nurses communicate with the doctors and all that sort of thing.
This is powerful. We need to
know
this.
Isn't that amazing?
This.
Yes.
That is amazing. Yes.
Amazing.
That is, I've never heard of this, Dr.
Well, and
never.
It's newish. Well, I'm so glad to have the opportunity to inform your listeners about this, because we need every tool. And I'm actually going to do one myself in the next couple of weeks. And it's great because, one, you're seen as a person and not just a disease. And it gives the doctor more of a sense of who you are. And it's something that can be quickly accessed. And the card gives a brief overview. And then the video, of course, you can say more, but the card will say, you know, I want this, I want that. And there's room for on the laminated card. And it has your picture on it.
So oh, my goodness.
You
Where
know
can
it's
we
you.
Get this?
You can go to, it's called Mideo, MIDEO.com.
Okay.
And
Mideo.com for the audience.
Yes.
Mideo.com.
Yes. And
that is amazing.
Dr. Mirarchi does an interview, and he says that Medicare can pay for part of it. It's a couple hundred dollars, and I guess there's a renewal fee, but talk about something that's well worth it, a few Starbucks coffees, and you can help protect yourself. And that's how I tell patients. They have to look at things. Sometimes they'll say, $50, and I'm just thinking, how have you let $50 slip through your fingers? Think about it. You know,
right?
And then once people think about it, they realize, well, this is a good place to spend $50, and when your health depends on it.
Absolutely. I mean, this is one of, I think this is one of the best things. Here we go. This is number two. This is something else that I'm going to be adding. First, I've learned the long-term health care insurance is very important. Number two, we have learned about we can get the video. That's the medical power of attorney, that's where you're stating your wishes, and it's on, this is so good, at Mideo.com. I'm going to post more about that. Thank you so much for bringing that up. That's amazing. That is amazing, because we never know what's going to happen, right? So you can have that on you at all times.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's MideoCard.com. So MideoCard. I just looked it up to check. Yeah, MideoCard.
Okay, MideoCard.com. Okay.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. All right. And getting back to, you know, we were talking earlier today about the coercive nature of Medicare. Just, you know, but as a doctor, what is the best way? You know, we've already discussed about having your questions, you know, ready and prepared. We've discussed getting second opinions, which we talk about a lot on this show. We think that's very imperative, is that if you're given, you know, whatever, you know, diagnosis. Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought I just heard something in the background. Yeah. That you get a second opinion. Yes.
Carly, when you have time, you have a caller online.
Absolutely. Let's take the call.
Area code 303, you're live and on the air.
Hello, this is Carly.
Yes, Carly's on
yes,
with you.
Yes, did you have a question?
Go ahead. Apparently they don't. Okay, go ahead.
Question or comment? Okay.
Nope.
Okay, maybe okay. They'll come back. We love questions and comments. Yes, we love. Dr. Singleton, getting back to what we were talking about earlier is, you know, when did, you know, can we, the coercive nature of Medicare, I was speaking to a physical therapist today, and that was one thing she was talking about is, you know, that a lot of these people that, you know, they may be bed bound or whatever, the insurance is not paying for it, you know, a lot of the things that they need. I asked her, I said, well, what kind of feedback, you know, I'm doing a show tonight, what kind of feedback can you give me to let's, you know, help to better, you know, our elder, you know, for our elders, and things like that. You've been in this field for a long time. What changes have you seen? You know, because to us, you know, like for me, it's a lot of it is very scary. But we want to give hope to our audience and give them tools that, you know, to protect themselves. And as a doctor, you know, can you speak a little bit about the coercive nature of Medicare? Go a little bit into in depth about that.
I'll tell you a couple of things. One, you just talked about how things have changed, that a whole difficult transition. In the beginning, Medicare, if you wanted it, Medicare paid for it. Obviously,
right.
Enough wasn't done to pay attention to where the money was going. There were very bizarre policies that way back in the 1970s, we couldn't figure out, like Medicare wouldn't pay for an X-ray as an outpatient, but they pay for it as an inpatient, which cost three times as much. Now that I'm more politically savvy and learned about lobbyists, you know, a light bulb goes off. Well, hospitals must have lobbied their Congress critters, and they decided that they'd pay for stuff done in the hospital but not done in outpatient procedures. Finally, that started to shift, and so there's positive money savings from paying for things to be done as an outpatient. But some of the negative ways to save money are when you get to denials of care in deciding that, well, that's just not medically necessary. That's where that second opinion comes in. And where
okay,
you need
so when,
somebody
so
to
when
fight
they come,
for that.
So I don't mean to interrupt you, but when the doctor says this is not that, you know, because you have to have a Medicare code to pay for just like everything, they have to have
right.
a code for it. And if they say, and you know that this person needs, they need to be hospitalized, they need something, this is where a second opinion comes in, correct?
Correct, correct.
Okay, so for example, like I had a situation with a family where they were in the emergency room. The nurse with family, this person needs to be hospitalized. Okay, but they're going to come in here and say that they cannot, that they can't find a reason to hospitalize this person because they have to justify everything to Medicare. And, you know, so I think a lot of people are not being treated because of that. You know, it's terrible, but it's true. So once
well,
you
this,
go and get
this
a second,
is where, you know, the whole idea of having savings and a health savings account that, again, and it doesn't matter what your age, you can start keeping money in a health savings account and have set aside some money so you can pay for some of these things out of your own pocket because you might have to, and not have that be something that holds you back, saying, oh,
right.
my goodness, you know, I can't afford that second opinion. And you just have to keep on telling yourself that, what is my life worth? And
yeah.
remind yourself that it's mm-hmm. worth a couple of $1,000s and
mm-hmm.
Keep that set aside just
mm-hmm.
for situations like that. And the thing is, that first doctor, it doesn't mean that he or she is malicious or whatever, especially
oh,
if it's in one of these big programs where there's multiple doctors all in one whole group and all that sort of thing. They have these guidelines they're supposed to follow, and some people don't want to rock the boat. Well,
mm-hmm.
there are other people who enjoy rocking the boat and will advocate for you. So
mm-hmm.
this is one way that I've seen Medicare change. Now, here's something
okay.
I think all your listeners need to know, and it's very
okay.
important. And this is Medicare rule. It's not even part of the Medicare law. If you decide that you do not want Medicare Part A, which is the hospital part, let's say you have some sort of a job that has good health insurance and they let you stay on that even in retirement or whatever the situation might be,
mm-hmm.
and you reject Medicare Part A,
mm-hmm.
you cannot get your Social Security money. And
oh.
if you reject Part A a few years, let's say, you know, you're 70 and you've been having Medicare Part A for 5 years, and for whatever reason you decide you want to reject it and you don't want it anymore,
mm-hmm.
they will take back the Social Security money they gave you in the past.
Uh-huh.
So not only do you not get it for the future, they
so
will remove
they're
it from the past.
Retroactive?
Yes. It's one of the most punitive things, and it actually went to court about 6-7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the judge that decided the case said, how did she put it? She said, the plaintiffs are trapped in a system and they can't escape.
Mm-hmm.
She said it didn't make sense to her, but she was reading what the regulation was and she had to follow the law. That was her job, was to follow the law. So
mm-hmm.
this is something, and in fact, Jim DeMint, when he was still a senator, had put
mm-hmm.
forth a bill to make it where you could drop your Medicare and not lose the Social Security. So this is something that's very important and things that people need to know. And it's interesting
yes.
when you go on the Medicare.gov website, this information is sort of buried in there. They haven't lied about it.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, that should be front and center.
Uh-huh.
I mean, front and center, because there are plenty of reasons somebody might not want to be in the Medicare system. And as we're learning, there's more and more reasons that you don't want to be in it, because you don't want to be trapped in their rules and their definition of what's medically necessary. But it doesn't mean
right.
that you don't want the Social Security money. In fact, you could
right.
use your Social Security payment to pay for some sort of private care. So, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. Crazy,
wow.
crazy system.
My mouth
and,
is dropped. Yes. This.
Well,
this
most
is,
people do when they discover this. So
this
is something
huge.
People need to know. Yeah.
Yeah, this is definitely, definitely something people. And I'm going to be putting this all, you know, that's a number three. That's the number three. thing here. I'm making notes because that's going to help. Thank you so much. You know, Dr. Singleton, that's going to help so many people, because people don't, just like that they have no idea. And then, you know, that is just, you know, that is life, that can be life-saving information. You know, so thank you so much for that. And like you said, that would be how they're kind of coercive, and it should be front and center. You should know that if you drop this is what's going to happen to you. you know, but, you know, getting back to options that are good for our families and things like that. That's what we want to, restore, you know, the culture of life and a lot of things that are going on. Cause a lot of people are terrified to go to their doctors. I mean, are you aware of that?
Yes. Yes, indeed. And it's very sad because that used to be the one place you could go and feel like someone was on your side.
Mhm. Mhm. How do you think, you know, we can try to get back? We want to be able to get back to a place where, well, I don't know if we're going to be able to. You know, we're trying to protect people and give them the tools and the knowledge, you know, to protect themselves now. But, you know, what would be your advice when you go to start looking for a doctor? You are a doctor. You know it's in your being. It's in your bones. You know it. You know, what would be some of the things that people should say, okay, when they're going and looking for a doctor, that they should look for? Can you give tips on that?
Well, one of the first things you can do is look for doctors on a list, and I'll give you a website that has a whole lot of links on it. It's called theselfpaypatient.com.
Okay.
And this gives links to doctors who have cash practices. Now, probably about 3/4 of those people also take Medicare, if a person happens to have Medicare. And
okay.
You can always pay a doctor out of pocket even if you have regular insurance. But Medicare has its own rules, you know, yet another thing. There have to be contracts that are signed, you know, showing that the doctor isn't taking advantage of a vulnerable person. And these are just people who want to spend an hour plus with the doctor. That's one of the advantages. They're called DPC practices, direct primary care. And that these folks can take care of Medicare patients, and they're opted out of the Medicare system. And they can, depending on what state you're in, and I don't know the laws for Georgia because different states have different rules about whether doctors can dispense medicines directly from the office, but in states where the doctors can dispense medicines directly, the patients could get them literally for 1/10 to 1/20 the price you end up paying. There are options out there. It's just that people don't know about it. But that's the first step. And the thing is, even if you call one of those offices and say, well, I do have Medicare and I might not be able to afford to pay out of pocket, usually those offices know of like-minded doctors.
Okay.
So it's a good fact-finding tool, even if you don't end up going to that doctor.
Okay. That is very good. I had a question on that regulation. Do you know where it's at in the Medicare, you know, where people do decide, they don't want, you know, Medicare Part A, then they don't get their Social Security money, and then that can go back. Where can I find
that?
Well,
actually, that's in the Medicare Procedure Manual, which is pretty amazing in itself. What I can do, because I don't have it right here at the tip of my tongue, is send you the case. And there's actually an article. Let me see if I can quickly look it up. I might be able to get the quick search term in an elder law newsletter about this. Let me just quickly
that is just
this
so
in.
Important. That is, you know, that's disgusting that that's occurring. And I'm so glad that you have brought this, out for people that have paid into this system their whole life. So, yeah.
Okay. Yes, I found the elder law article.
Okay.
And this is an article written January 23rd, 2015, and it's entitled, "You Can't Opt Out of Medicare Without Losing Social Security, Judge Rule." And, yes, so, I mean, you could put the actual link. It's in on a website called elderlawanswers.com.
elderlawanswers.com. Okay, that's for our audience. elderlawanswers.com. That was it. January 23rd, 2015.
Right. And so you could put in as the search term Social Security, or put in Medicare lose Social Security. And
yeah,
sure
Medicare lose Social Security.
Up. And okay. Let's see, right now I'm just going to, I'll just email you the link. So
thank you so
you'll have
much.
The link.
Yes.
Okay. I'll put in the.
You know, the more you know, knowledge really is power. And I just appreciate, we just are so thankful.
Well, it is. And so hopefully you'll be, and I just sent the link to you, so you'll get the exact article, but that way you definitely know that there's a case, there's it, and it explains it right there, and it's and it even has the link to the court decision. It's sad.
Thank you so much.
But
really,
it's there.
Thank you so much.
And like I say, it's on Medicare's website. I've combed the Medicare.gov website looking for information, just like looking for pricing and all this sort of thing, things that surprise people, you know, how they don't pay for long-term care after 30 days and you have to go back in the hospital for 30 more days so you can come out, have it paid for, and then the price gets exorbitant after the 30 days. It goes up from 30 to 60, then it goes up really high from 60 to 90. So there's all these rules that unfortunately people find out about too late. You know, they're right in the midst of it. The other rule that people are trying to change, this is a terrible rule. This is the two midnight rule. And if anybody's ever gone to the emergency room and wondered why they've stayed there so long, now, unless you're actually admitted to the hospital, Medicare will not pay for skilled nursing. And it kind of made sense when people actually went to the emergency room and had something that could be treated right there and could be sent home. Now they're keeping stroke patients in the emergency room for 2.5 days. That way, they were never admitted to the hospital, and there's different payment rates that for the same treatment, if you get it done in the emergency room versus if you get it done in a hospital bed. So the hospital will keep you in the emergency room, and then they'll get some more money. But what that does is it basically ruins things for the patient, because then they can't get their skilled nursing paid for. And if you've had a stroke, everybody needs a good week of some skilled nursing to get that occupational therapy, et cetera. And
yes.
So these are things people find out too late. They find out when they've gotten the bill and they thought, well, I thought Medicare paid for that. No, only if you were admitted to the hospital, and the family thinks the patient was admitted. They say they've been in there for 2 days, but they were just
but they
in the ER bed, not the hospital bed. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That is horrifying. That is disgusting. disgusting. I mean, they're making more money, and that's what we talk about on this show, is it is profit over people. It's disgusting what we have come to in the healthcare system.
It is, but like you said, it keep on informing people. Just keep on letting people know.
But I want to give people hope. I want them to be equipped. And another thing I wanted to ask you, Dr. Singleton, I tell people all the time to know their rights, both federal and state. That's so important to know your rights, because a lot of people don't know. I mean, they just do not know. They don't think about it. And now I think with the culture that we're in now, how things have changed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We need to know our rights, okay, to protect ourselves. You know, whether or not they enforce them or not, you know, you can try the best that you can to make them enforce that, but that is just unbelievable that they would do that and keep that. I mean, you know, keep on informing is absolutely this is the best way I know, is to keep, that's why I created, you know, this show, is that's the best way, is to keep speaking out and letting people know the truth about what's going on. They're not going to get this information anywhere else.
Patients have to tell their congressperson, because at least one thing changed in this whole two midnight rule is that now people have to be shown the piece of paper, and it has to be in large enough print that says, unless you're admitted to the hospital, Medicare won't pay for this, that, or the other. You know, that they're informing people. Didn't change the rule. People are still trying to work on that, but at least people would know, and it could help them decide what path they're going to take and not be blindsided like so many of these rules do. People are,
right,
are stunned because they can't believe that there's a rule like that.
They are. Yes. We are. Just like our family, you know, we found out a lot of things the hard way. And this is, this is life-saving information. I really feel like this is. And, you know, we can better make choices for our loved ones, you know. We have about 2 minutes left, Dr. Singleton. You know, I really look forward to having you perhaps on the show in the future. I have learned so much. I think I have 3 pages of notes I have written so far. Just by listening, though, I mean, I really appreciate it from the bottom of my heart for our audience and for, you know, this is what I want for my audience. I want them to know and to be informed and to, you know, and to really be smart so that they can make the very best decisions for themselves and for their loved ones. What would be your last words of advice for us? What can we learn from just, how would you like to leave?
I'd just like to say to everyone, speak up, speak up, speak up. And as long as you're polite about it, people will listen. And if we want these laws changed, it has to start with the patients. That's the one group of people that city, state, federal officials will pay attention to patients. When enough complain, something will get done. But sadly, we've been sort of cowed into keeping our mouth shut. And we just can't be that way anymore. And
I agree.
Our lives depend on it. And you just keep on thinking that. If you ever feel afraid to speak out, just say, my life depends on it.
That is so powerful. Oh my God, that is so true, Dr. Singleton. And our family has a test because we did speak up and we did speak out. And my grandmother's been alive for 4 years after she was misdiagnosed with 2 end-stage diseases. And all she had was a urinary tract infection. So, on that note, you guys, yeah. And
well,
on that note, yeah. So, that is very powerful advice. Thank you so much for coming on. I have enjoyed this thoroughly.
Well, me too.
Can I have you again on again? I would love to have you on again sometime.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we can,
you know where to find me.
Yes, we can continue this conversation. So to all my guests, I thank you very much wherever you may be in this world. I love you guys. We hang in there. We're going to keep on fighting, and we are going to we're going to change things is what we're going to do. And with that, I appreciate you so much, and I hope you have a wonderful evening, Dr. Singleton.
You
thank
too.
You for joining us.
Thank you, Carly. Bye-bye.
Yes, bye-bye. Okay. Good evening.